Elra.
Previously on Legacy Door.
Look familiar? Look around the mask, ears, chin, forehead.
That's her. Who is that?
That is Harriet Reese, Harrison's mother. And she was in the clip Abby showed me from a few years later with Abby's dad and Uncle Frank.
But not acting as friendly with him as here.
Correct. And I'm pretty sure her eyes were normal in that. She looked pleased at first, then angry. Here, she's nothing.
Yeah. Scary nothing. Plus, I think I didn't get a clear look. She could have been the other human in my last dream. The one Frank didn't trust.
She recognized Corva Reese, the middle child, born the same year as Vanessa and Dan, and looking like a more toned version of Harriet at that age, which was to say, very striking indeed, who had gotten an MBA the previous year from University of Chicago's Booth School of Business. Her undergrad had been at Oberlin, and before that, something called the Hall School in Kingsport, Massachusetts. The internet didn't seem to know where she was currently working.
I didn't have nightmares every night like Owen did, but they were still bad enough that Dad put me on a weaker dose of what they give Owen. Brown, viscous stuff.
Legacy Door, Episode 3.8, Socializing.
Joyce Vera, 11:24 a.m. Joyce parked at the office supply store and was pleasantly surprised that Vanessa didn't wake up. She left her sleeping and went in to pick up the printouts, along with some envelopes. Only when she emerged did she think to worry that something would happen to Ven in her absence, but she was immediately relieved to see Dan's silver Ford right where she'd left it, with Vanessa conked out on the passenger seat. She remained conked as Joyce drove onward to John O's downtown office building. Predictably finding nothing on the street, Joyce drove into a wincingly expensive parking garage nearby, locked Vanessa into the car, and had a sweaty jog back. Once inside the blissfully cool elevator, she stuffed the three inner envelopes, addressed them to three investigative journalists who Vanessa had researched, and put all three into a larger envelope. The elevator opened directly into a well-appointed, floor-spanning office, and Joyce felt self-conscious and observed. She wished that, lacking a business suit, she had at least acquired lycra pants and a bike helmet somewhere so as to look like a courier. But then she decided, philosophically, that her vision of such an outfit was probably outdated and Hollywood-based anyway. The receptionist was very good about not taking notice of her jeans and white V-neck as Joyce stated her business. She'd been prepared to leave the package, but the receptionist immediately contacted John O, who came out and led Joyce back with a simple,
"Hi, I'm John O. Follow me."
He turned on the light in a small conference room and set an unsealed business-size envelope down on the table. Joyce noticed that it bore his firm's logo and was self-addressed by hand and stamped.
"And your name is?"
he asked after closing the door.
"Joyce Vera, V-E-R-A. You should look at this first."
She handed him the cover letter.
"Huh. I see. You know, I honestly thought it sounded like her, but I figured it was my mind playing tricks on me after all this time."
Joyce smiled sympathetically.
"She's someone you remember."
John went, with a little discomfort, looking like he was suppressing the urge to confide something, but instead continued.
"And you have the items she wants to entrust."
Joyce took out the large envelope and put it on the table.
"Here they are. We've sealed three addressed envelopes inside of this. You'll have to bill us for the postage. Speaking of which, this..."
She handed him a smaller envelope containing 20 $100 bills.
"Is your retainer."
John took the envelope gingerly, said,
"I'll get you a receipt for that,"
and handed her his own envelope.
"Here are the representation documents. There are instructions, but please remind her that I won't be able to do anything until I get them back."
Joyce nodded, and there was an awkward moment. He looked concerned and spoke again.
"And please, do have her contact me if there's anything I can advise her about. This all seems like something someone in trouble would do."
It occurred to Joyce that she probably didn't look very serious. She'd been smiling ever since she'd felt the blessed air conditioning. Turning the smile more measured and confiding, she said,
"I'll tell her that, and I'm sure she'll think it over. I imagine you'll hear from her soon."
And then she felt the smile disappear as she looked down at the large envelope and remembered the reason for it. She added,
"And if not, I guess you know what she wants you to do.
John took an audible breath.
Well then, I guess good luck to both of you.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Once all the details were completed, she returned to the car, glad again to see Vanessa's still-sleeping form. Not just that she hadn't been kidnapped, but also hadn't awoken alone in a strange place. The sleep continued during the final leg down to Hyde Park. Having made good time, Joyce found a parking spot on the street, used her phone to pay the 2-hour maximum, then watched Vanessa snooze in the passenger seat for a few minutes. Joyce had expected Vanessa to sleep like a cherub, head tilted back against the seat, lips together in a subtle smile, hands perhaps palm in a little prayer. In reality, Vanessa's hands hung limp between her legs, her mouth open so wide a sparrow could have nested in it. This unglamorous attitude didn't diminish the other woman in Joyce's eyes. Far from it. For the first time, she felt like she was really getting her and might be able to sculpt something that did her justice. Joyce hoped there would be time for that later. For now, Vanessa was trusting her to keep things moving, no matter how much good that sleep was probably doing her.
Ven?
Said Joyce, receiving no immediate response.
Vanessa.
Vanessa inhaled like she'd just come up from underwater, her limp hands rising and clumsily batting, as if at an unseen alarm clock. When they came into contact with the dashboard, she seemed to become aware that this was not her bedroom, and her eyes opened, alarmed, darting in several directions before settling on Joyce in the driver's seat.
What? Oh,
said Vanessa, breath only slowly returning to normal.
Are we there?
We're close. We'll have to walk about a block and a half. There's a mailbox on the way if you want to fill out the lawyer stuff. You all right?
Okay,
said Vanessa, still getting her bearings.
I'm okay.
You sure about that?
Vanessa nodded and swallowed with some effort.
I think I remember a song we learned in sixth grade. Do you know it? It goes...
She looked perplexed, then said...
It's gone.
Should we get you a coffee or something?
No, I've had too much already.
Her voice became very clear, as if to demonstrate a similar clarity of thought.
Okay, you mentioned papers. You talked to John O. Everything went okay?
Yes and yes. He seemed trustworthy, but concerned.
Understandable. That's the envelope?
Yep.
Vanessa took a few minutes to carefully read everything, shaking herself a couple times as if to ward off drowsiness. Joyce discreetly checked her phone. Her few messages were mostly trivial, but included one from Dudek saying a small gallery was interested in showing a few of her pieces.
Okay, all done.
Joyce put her phone away and looked over at her, smiling at the wide-open eyes that demonstrated Vanessa's continued overcompensating wakefulness. Vanessa's voice became forcibly chipper.
Now, I'm ready. We're here to meet Lois Allman at noon, and it's almost that now.
She pointed at the car clock and made a drum roll on the dashboard with her hands.
I'm good. Let's go.
She clapped her hands together, undid her seatbelt, and was out of the car before Joyce could get into motion. By the time they mailed the envelope, they could already see the building where Allman lived, a steely blue, very modern-looking tower. They entered the glass-walled lobby, and Vanessa gave her name at the security desk. Word had apparently been left to send them up, as they were immediately directed to a bank of elevators. They entered, and Vanessa pushed the 33 button. Her eyes fixed on the floor indicator display with such intensity that Joyce felt inclined to inquire.
Did you ever live in one of these high-rises?
Nope. I had some downtown friends who did. It's nice for a nighttime dip in the roof pool, or to see fireworks happen beneath you, or to turn the lights out and watch the river of cars on Lakeshore Drive. But I don't think I'd like it day to day. It seems like a lot of money to live at the mercy of elevators. And of course, like I mentioned, I never wanted to live down here because of Dad.
Joyce found this nuanced position as between different kinds of luxurious living amusing, given the places she'd had to live. But her resulting smile was affectionate. Her motive in asking the question had been to help Vanessa relax, and it seemed to have worked. The elevator doors opened. Joyce looked rightwards to figure out the unit numbers, but a voice from the left interrupted her.
Hello,
said a woman their age, proffering a glass of red wine in each hand. She was wearing a lightweight black jumpsuit with two white diagonal stripes going downward from the top corner and across the legs, parallel to a diagonal cut that exposed one shoulder, supported on that side by a strap from a black fabric choker. The clingy top half and loose flowing pant legs were unquestionably meant to achieve an effect of attractive sophistication, but the guileless smile of the woman wearing it, plus her bare feet, gave Joyce a sense of a child throwing a tea party. Joyce stepped forward so as to pull up even with Vanessa.
Hello, I'm Vanessa, and this is my friend Joyce. Are you Lois?
Yes, I am. Call me Loey. Come in, grab some red, and let's get talking.
Vanessa looked at Joyce inquiringly, and Joyce sucked in her lips in indecision. They hadn't considered ahead of time how imprudent it might be, under the life-and-death circumstances, to take drinks from someone they didn't know, but it seemed too late now to refuse without spoiling the mood. Joyce made a quick decision and said,
Oh, you two have some, please. I just started my new meds.
If one of them was going to get drugged and rely on the other to get them out, she'd rather be the active one. Plus, she thought, if everything was innocent, then Vanessa should be doing the bonding.
Oh, well, here you go, Vanessa.
She handed her the glass from her right hand.
And I'll take this one.
Almond drank a first sip. Vanessa did likewise, with a slightly uncomfortable look, but then made a noise of positive enjoyment.
It's good, right?
Reacted Almond approvingly, while leading them into a very large, bright, modern-looking wood-floored living room. A polished granite counter demarcated the kitchen area. Atop it, there were three wooden platters carrying an array of rustic finger food.
I think it'll go great with the cheeses there. And there's the bottle if you want to take a look. Can I get you anything, Joyce? I've got all kinds of sparkling water.
Sounds wonderful. Something lemon or lime-y would be great,
replied Joyce, who would honestly have preferred tap water but wanted to keep things festive. Lois stopped by the counter, downing enough of her red wine that she could pour the contents of the glass waiting there into the one she carried, then quickly rinsed the emptied one in the mirror-finished sink. She turned around, opened the matching refrigerator, and, after a moment's observation, pulled out something with a European-looking label.
I bet you're a straight-from-the-bottle girl.
That's me!
Joyce listened carefully as Lois twisted the top, and hearing the reassuring sound of equalizing air pressure, accepted the bottle. Loey then continued,
Here, everyone grab a board and let's sit.
She indicated the area where a white leather couch sat. Coffee table, rugs, and a TV indicated the lounging space.
Should we take off our shoes?
Asked Joyce, eyeing the rugs and her hostess's bare feet.
Oh, great idea. Thanks.
They doubled back to the door to do so, then walked to the counter, where each picked up a tray of really delicious-looking cheese with pleasing accompaniment and carried it to the coffee table. The wall on that side of the room was all window, offering a panoramic view of the street, the Museum of Science and Industry, the greenery surrounding it, and Lake Michigan filling the horizon beyond. Altogether, a much wider and more varied world than was visible at street level. Whatever Vanessa said, this seemed to Joyce like a fine way to live.
That's nice,
said Vanessa, indicating the view while setting her board down and taking a seat on the couch. Joyce did likewise on her left, then Lois to her right on the matching easy chair.
Yeah, pretty, isn't it? Okay, you see all the meat things are on that one. In case either of you don't want to look at them, you're not vegan, are you?
Oh no.
Great. So you said friend. I assumed you were colleagues or partners, like lawyers or detectives or something.
We got your information from a friend of mine who works at a law firm, but what we're doing is personal.
Lois nodded at this while sipping her wine down to the level of Vanessa's, then added,
And it's about Corva, right?
Yes.
Lois put her wine down and used a curved implement to cut a slice of cheese onto a thick brown cracker.
Well, she is very interesting. Come on, girls, dig in.
Joyce and Vanessa uncomfortably considered the food for a moment. Then Joyce said,
That looks delicious.
Vanessa handed her the tray with Lois's full-mouthed encouragement, and both had slices of that same cheese. Joyce verbalized sincere enjoyment. Lois swallowed, looking very pleased and proud, then prompted,
So what do you want to know about her?
Well, I guess this is kind of awkward, but there's a situation involving some friends we have in common, and I don't know her at all, so I was hoping to find out some things about her before I tried to get her involved.
I can see your problem. Corva can be intimidating, not to mention hard to get hold of. She was always like that.
You two went to school together?
Yeah, we were at Hall out east. That was a different kind of thing. Boarding, uniforms, lights out, contraband, and all girls, of course, unless we smuggled a boy in. It felt a long way from the world. We were roomies from the second year on.
Joyce saw Vanessa bite her lip, seemingly having trouble figuring out what to say. So Joyce asked,
"Was she popular?"
"She was a leader, I'd say. When she talked, everyone listened to her. But she wasn't besties with anyone. I know a few had girl crushes on her, or straight-up crushes for that matter, but she didn't do anything to encourage them. Or rather, she didn't reciprocate or do anything to promise she would. But she had this mysterious way about her that might have been a kind of encouragement if she was doing it on purpose."
"Do you think she was?"
"Oh, yeah, definitely some. She didn't talk a lot, but when she said something, you knew she wanted everyone to listen. There was doom and gloom stuff about history repeating itself or the climate going to hell, but she'd also do her glamours, and you don't do that if you don't want an audience."
"Glamours?"
"Yeah. She'd tilt her head and move her hand, and then she could make you do whatever she wanted. Think your hand was stuck to your forehead, or act like your favorite animal, or anything, really."
"Anything?"
"Well, not really. I asked her about it a million times, and eventually she told me a few things. Like, she could only do it with some people, but when she met someone, she had quick ways of telling whether she could. And there was a trick she'd try sometimes, when it was just the two of us and one other girl, where she'd put the other girl under. With permission, of course. She was always careful about that. Anyway, she'd have the other girl describe everything she saw, and then have me put something behind the girl. Then she'd tell the girl to describe what I'd put there by putting her mind in Corva's body so she could see it from Corva's point of view. Strange, huh?"
Lois stopped speaking while she spread a soft cheese onto a slice of cucumber, thereby missing the other women's look of enthralled shock.
"Did it ever work?"
"Of course not! That would be impossible!"
Her laughter continued melodiously for about half a minute, rising and falling like the babble of a brook. Joyce joined in on the laugh as best she could, but Vanessa looked grim. Joyce gave her a light elbow jab, and Vanessa nodded and turned her face down as she made and ate her own cheese and cucumber, thereby hiding her lack of hilarity. As soon as Lois settled again, she spoke.
"Sorry, I guess I got caught up in the story."
"That'll happen. No worries. I guess it kind of embarrassed Corva, too, because she'd glamour the girl to forget about that part and not talk about it, both which she wouldn't do for her other tricks."
"But she trusted you without a glamour, given that you're talking about it now."
"Well, they don't last forever. I mean, if she forgot to take it off Katie Barstow all those years ago, that doesn't mean she'd still have her hand stuck to her head."
Joyce chuckled politely, not at all sure of Loie's conclusion.
"So yeah. I don't remember her doing that to me, but if so, I imagine it's worn off long ago. We've all moved on. I mean, I really miss those days and being with those girls all the time. Maybe you can tell, since I've been talking like a fire hose since you got here. But if I was suddenly back there, I'd be ecstatic for maybe 10 minutes, and then I'd want a drink and a toke and a fun dude around. That's human nature."
"So you don't see Corva anymore?"
"Different paths. Different undergrad, and then when we both came here for grad, we were in different parts of the campus. And now she's in the world, and I still haven't got my master's. Trying out this and that, volunteering here and there. I figure there's no hurry."
Joyce found herself simultaneously envying and pitying Lois's aimless, privileged existence, with its undercurrent of loneliness. Lois went on,
"She'll call up sometimes, and we'll hang out, but she's got a lot on her plate. I guess even more with what happened to her brother. She's handling that and says it's got her mom distracted. So Corva's having to fill in for her at work, too."
"Are she and her mother close?"
"Always super close. I think that's part of how driven she is. It seems like her mom wants her to just keep achieving things, and Corva's pretty gung-ho about it. Though on the other hand, she did have to slow down sometimes. She got really bad nightmares, and every once in a while they'd be too much for her."
Loie, apparently having a flair for pausing her narrative right where it touched on the things they most wanted to know, returned her attention to the board and cut a slice of summer sausage. Joyce raised and dropped her hands to show Vanessa her impatience.
Nightmares?
Yeah. Apparently ever since she was little. She had a medication for them, but always seemed to be trying to take as little of it as possible, or even skip it, because she said she wanted to stay sharp. But every once in a while, things got bad and she'd take more, and then it would be my job to take care of her for the rest of the day.
I bet you liked that.
It's nice to be needed. Maybe that's what I'm missing here. I keep thinking I should get a little dog or something, but Corva says I'm not ready for the responsibility. She keeps buying me plants so I can prove myself, and I manage to kill them all.
Joyce saw Vanessa's eyes widen, her breath catch, and her mouth open a little.
How often do you see Corva, exactly?
Lois Allman's eyes looked cagey, like a child caught in a scheme, and she started whatever she was going to say with,
"Well..."
but then was cut off by a deeper voice.
"Don't worry about it, Loey. I'll take over from here."
Vanessa and Joyce stood up and looked behind them to see none other than Corva Reese walking into the room, dressed in a very simple office ensemble of black blazer, white tank top, and gray skirt. She carried this all with an air of relaxed power, not lessened by the fact that she, also, was barefoot. Joyce wondered if that was for stealth.
Corva, hello. We'd like to talk to you.
Corva tilted her head forward slightly, eyes scanning around the room before concentrating on Vanessa.
It sounded like you were talking about me.
It seemed like a good first step.
Lois started to speak again.
It wasn't anything.
But was interrupted again.
Sit back and go to sleep, Loey.
Said Corva without taking her eyes off Vanessa.
It's all good.
Vanessa kept her eyes on Corva, but Joyce stole a glance to watch as Lois calmly, without any awkwardness, settled back in her chair and closed her eyes.
What about us? Any instructions?
Perhaps. You could take a moment to realize that regardless of whatever plan you walked in here with, you could both easily be dead now.
Yes, as dead as Harrison.
What she said hung in the air for a moment. Joyce liked Vanessa's play, but realized she was gambling on a relationship they didn't really know anything about.
Or as dead as Abby, right?
Joyce watched Vanessa nod slowly.
You two are friends?
Yes.
Joyce could see a muscle move in Ven's neck, an urge to modify or qualify the simple statement, which she was suppressing.
Tell me, as a personal favor, had you met her father?
Only in passing. We never really talked.
Oh, Jonathan. He should have seen this coming. Getting your father involved in fixing our troubles was a neat magic trick, but only if no one saw the connection. Otherwise, something like this was far too possible.
Something like what?
Someone getting curious. Someone unusually sensitive and clever enough to see a pattern, and unworldly enough to pursue it. Even when investigation seemed dangerous and unrewarding. And particularly you, since you're both a Dorn and a Lutcher. Have a seat.
Corva said, heading for the love seat opposite the couch.
That is, if you want to keep talking.
Vanessa and Joyce settled back down. Joyce wondered if Corva could have forced them to sit. Or perhaps had.
Okay. What do you want?
I want my brother. And more time for Dan Lutcher and Owen Strauss. And some answers.
The last of those is the only one I can really give you. And every answer will come with a price. A potentially dangerous one.
I'm prepared to negotiate prices and to deal with whoever I have to deal with for the things you can't get me.
Joyce nodded, very glad to be there for moral support, talk of death and danger notwithstanding. But she knew that Vanessa was the real player now.
You've been listening to Legacy Door, Episode 3.8, Socializing. Jamie Gosling was the primary narrator. Michelle Limone was Joyce Vera. Daniel Yee was John O. Stacey Tappan was Vanessa Dorn. Teresa Echeveste was Lois Allman. And Song Marshall was Corva Reese. The opening music was Ethereal Thoughts by Victor Wayne. The closing music is Everything Will Be All Right by Melancholic Bird. You can hear more from them on Toon Tank. The Legacy Door cover photograph is by Roxana Anash. This episode's cover image is White Wooden Door with Black Metal Lever by Petor Magera. You can find more of their images at Unsplash. So, our heroes' socializing has led them directly to the woman they wanted to talk to. Their conversation will get much more in-depth and far out in our next episode, Unearthing. Until then, you can find us on Twitter, Blue Sky, and Facebook, all of which can be found at our website, legacydoor.wordpress.com. You can also support us by reviewing us in Apple Podcasts or your podcatcher of choice, or purchasing the novel from Amazon or the audiobook at online stores, including Audible. This is presented by Dueling Genre Productions, home of many fine podcasts. Legacy Door is copyright 2021 by Bob J. Kester, all rights reserved. This is Bob J. Kester. Thank you for listening.